hurt me.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Ah!
from the Whitefish Bay Singers off their ABBA record CD, Nedutamag, meaning our clans. That particular song is known as a jingle dress song. The woman's jingle dress is a very beautiful dance that also signifies offering prayers to the Creator, the Great Spirit. The jingle dress traditionally has 350 cones or jingles, each representing a day of the year in which we offer our prayers each day to the Great Spirit. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kadishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast is Program 3 of Wolf Mountain Radio's special series entitled Fighting Nuclear Power, A Conversation with Mary Olson. Mary Olson is an anti-nuclear activist and staff member for many years with the fine organization Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Yad Kadishi Native Center has networked with NIRS for a long time, especially fighting nuclear issues affecting tribal communities in Native homelands. Mary Olson, whom I am honored to call my friend, is director of NIRS's Southeast Office. Mary visited Yad Kadishi Native Center, where we spoke together about many serious nuclear energy issues. Yad Kadishi Native Center, as an Earth Justice organization, has from our very beginning been fighting against global nuclear energy policy, nuclear power, and all of the serious aspects of nuclear development, namely mining and milling of uranium, nuclear waste, weapons detonation tests, radioactive contamination of air, land, and water, poisoning ecosystems, human health impacts, and the international transport of nuclear fuel and/or nuclear waste by truck, railroad, or ship. Nuclear power's long record of serious safety accidents, radiation release incidents, and violations of monitoring and operation procedures provide little assurance that a global nuclear industry can really be trusted to protect all life on the planet, now and into the future, for many generations. What about nuclear accidents at power stations such as Diablo Canyon, Shoreham, Nine Mile Point, Midland, Marble Hill, Seabrook, Davis Bess, Comanche Peak, and others I could mention? Remember Three Mile Island in 1979 and the efforts to cover up the truth of what happened by both government and industry officials? We now know that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 1979 greatly underestimated the seriousness and amounts of radiation released at TMI. We now know that there were great problems with air monitors not working at Three Mile Island. 1 week before the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania accident, an NRC inspector named Jim Cresswell met with two NRC commissioners, Peter Bradford and John Ahern, to express his concern that the TMI reactors were unsafe and should be shut down until the problems corrected. We know his warnings were dismissed. Some who are concerned about corporate control of nuclear power advocate governments operating nuclear power plants. Remember Chernobyl in Russia? Yucca Mountain in the Western Shoshone homeland, Nui Sogabia, now called Nevada, the U.S. government's proposed storage site of America's nuclear waste has been publicly exposed to be unsuitable for radioactive waste storage. In testimony before the U.S. Senate, the chief U.S. Geological Survey scientist for Yucca Mountain admitted that as a result of political pressure, he lied under oath about the geological suitability of the planned nuclear waste repository. U.S. Department of Energy scientists have likewise admitted to not only falsifying scientific data, but also making up information about the long-term sustainability of Yucca Mountain as a result of political pressure to present a favorable picture
for Yucca Mountain. The economics of nuclear power generation, which disproportionately impacts the poor, is an entire topic little understood by the general public, who bears the outrageous per kilowatt costs of nuclear energy. Remember the industry's promise nuclear power would be, quote, too cheap to meter, unquote? While nuclear policy should be of concern to everyone, in many ways, nuclear issues most affects indigenous peoples throughout the world. The history of nuclear development, both for military weapons as well as for commercial nuclear power, is a history of abuse to native peoples and exploitation of our sacred territories on Mother Earth. Not only has tribal lands been raped and sacred sites desecrated for uranium mining, but many of those who worked as miners are tribal people who have had little economic choice but to labor in horrific health and safety conditions in order to support their families. Most Native workers were never told of the grave health dangers from uranium mining, nor were they given any protective clothing or equipment. As a further insult, a number of American Indian homes and schools were knowingly built with radioactive adobe, which have caused many deaths and serious illness in Native communities. Carcinogenic, mutagenic, and teratogenic birth effects in American Indian families are now well-documented exposure effects. Aquifer water in very arid regions where uranium is mined have been greatly overdrawn and used up. Surface and underground water as well have been seriously contaminated with radioactivity. This, of course, has caused human health problems as well as poisoning crops and livestock, which many Native people depend upon for subsistence. As an ecologist, I've long spoken out about how radioactivity becomes part of the food web, poisoning all life. Radioactive isotopes, now in the atmosphere, are often transported by wind or deposited from snow or rainfall, impacting many places on the Earth. The circumpolar Arctic, which in photographs looked pristine, are now seriously contaminated from nuclear fallout. A serious example is the case of the indigenous Arctic Sami reindeer people, who can no longer live their traditional herding life as a result of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant explosion, whose radiation poisoned their Arctic tundra, including their reindeer. In what is now called the U.S. Southwest, many tribal nations' homelands have been so wasted by the nuclear fuel cycle that sacred lands have been turned into highly toxic dead zones that are now termed national sacrifice areas. This is a situation I've seen in person and reported on for many years. An example, my work with the In Defense of Sacred Lands project. In the traditional homeland of the Oglala Titiwan, some call Sioux Indians, Lakota communities such as Red Shirt, who have fished the Cheyenne River and used river water for irrigating their gardens for many generations, now have radioactive warning signs posted along the river. Longtime listeners to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices have heard our 9-program interview series with Defenders of the Black Hills coordinator Charmaine Whiteface speak about many cultural and ecological issues affecting the Osete Sikawan, Great Sioux Nation. One serious problem are the numerous abandoned uranium mines and radioactive waste in their sacred Black Hills Pahasapa. The Midiwakantan Dakota, who are more commonly known as the Prairie Island Indian community in what's now called Minnesota, have had to, since 1973, live next to Xcel Energy's 2 nuclear power, 1,076 megawatt reactors called Prairie Island Nuclear Power Plant. In addition to the usual dangers of living adjacent to nuclear power plants, from routine releases of radiation venting into the air and toxic discharges into the water, the Medewi Wakantan tribal community are also threatened by high-level radioactive spent fuel that are kept on-site in dry cast storage at Prairie Island Generating Station. Prairie Island is a floodplain of the Mississippi River. In the mid-1980s, my own Wabanaki Native Territory was threatened by a U.S. government proposed nuclear waste dump to be built on Penobscot land. This was after years of fighting against the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant that was built at a sacred coastal site we Indians call Winnemucca. The wonderful Quahog Clamshell Alliance that I and other Native and non-Native brothers and sisters were active in, although unable to stop Seabrook, at least till now, have prevented the planned nuclear waste dump being forced on Wabanaki land. The spirit of the Quahog Clamshell Alliance, which brought people of different cultures and backgrounds together to protect Mother Earth and our own human family from the insanity of developing nuclear energy, is needed now more than ever. The resurgence of nuclear power throughout the world requires people to come together again to defend Mother Earth and all life from a greedy political, economic, insane nuclear industry. One of the greatest public PR deceptions is how nuclear power is now being promoted as an environmentally friendly energy source for the 21st century. As concern about global warming is now headline news, Yad Kiddushi Native Center hopes this Wolf Mountain Radio program encourages people to fight to defend Mother Earth from nuclear energy. It is now my great pleasure to welcome one such fine Earth Justice Warrior, anti-nuclear activist, Mary Olson to Wolf Mountain Radio. Mary, in today's program introduction, I briefly mentioned how many of us fighting against nuclear power have grave concerns about government officials lying to the public, especially in the areas of nuclear safety and nuclear waste. It is, of course, very important to have a healthy skepticism about public relations statements manufactured by the nuclear industry, as well as by government agencies. Electric utilities spend millions of dollars in advertising in efforts to create a good public image. TV and radio commercials often depict a huge power company as a friendly, caring, safe neighbor. Hidden by these public deception ads are the truth about the cost and pricing structure of nuclear power, not to mention the many serious violations of government regulations by power companies. As serious and troubling industry PR campaigns are, such as non-disclosure of power company records, inspection and monitoring reports, as well as deliberate cover-ups of utilities' failure to comply with Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Environmental Protection Agency, and Occupational Safety Health Administration regulations, what should very much worry people is how government agencies have intentionally lied and provided misinformation to the American public. U.S. government officials' testimony before various congressional committees, as documented in the congressional record, have in fact been to show to be outright lies, falsification of data, or serious deliberate omissions of fact. One excellent way in which Yad Kiddushi Native Center keeps informed in all this, and I suggest our worldwide listeners do, is read World Information Service on Energy, WISE, publications. Their Nuclear Monitor newsletter, published 20 times a year, in association with your organization, the Nuclear Information Resource Service, is an excellent reference. Please visit WISE's website, www.antenna.nl/WISE. Once again, visit WISE's website, that's World Information Service on Energy, at www.antenna.nl/WISE for more information. I also appreciate Nuclear Information Resources Service Reactor Watchdog Project, which is on your NIRS website at www.nirs.org. Mary, would you please comment on the serious issue of government lies, deceit, and deception, as an example being the U.S. Department of Energy?
Yes, we've called nuclear energy the big lie, and yet to me it's an extension of this concept of privilege and exploitation and supremacy that is the basis for our bubble economy that rides on the backs of the rest of the world. Nuclear is the front edge of that entire big lie. You know, it's the front edge of controlling the world through the supremacy of nuclear weapons and threatening them around the world. You know, we have a little video DVD of a fellow at Los Alamos who was the top nuclear weapons designer speaking to his new recruits, talking about the role of nuclear weapons and saying that the United States threatens other countries, that their existence will go away, and that that's why we have nuclear weapons. He doesn't know he's speaking to the public. This was snuck out. But, you know, whether it's enforcing that supremacy through saying, if you don't go along with us, we're going to obliterate you, or whether it's through telling people, okay, if you don't have nuclear energy, you're going to freeze in the dark. It's all this front edge of this big lie of control, of domination, of supremacy. It all comes part and parcel. However, I have to drop out of that warp for a moment and speak to the issue of the Yucca Mountain lie, because I'm personally involved intimately in having created the situation in which that happened. Yucca Mountain is a compressed ash left from a lava flow. It sits on a basal plain with a row of lava cones, the youngest of which is just adjacent to this compressed ash thing. We use the word mountain, but this is just a low ridge in the desert that they want to dig down under it and put the high-level nuclear waste below it, but not all that far down. So anyway, they've got this row of lava cones. They've got this worst rock in the entire geologic inventory. This site was not chosen for any reason but politics, and it was politics between members of Congress, and we can go into that, but I just want to emphasize that there was all kinds of data that all you had to do was look at it with a clean scientific eye, and you would know that you would not want to bury nuclear waste at this site. You could tell that in 10 minutes visiting the place. Just the whole thing of how the Hawaiian Islands are formed, where there's a magma pocket under the crust of the earth, and then it's like making cookies. You're shooting those cookies out of that pastry bag, you know? And the Hawaiian Islands are just a row of the earth above moving across this one hot spot, and each time it shoots an island up or a cookie, right? Well, the same thing at Yucca Mountain. There's this row of lava cones. The youngest one is right off of Yucca Mountain, so you know the mountain's sitting on the magma pocket. That's why it is so fractured. That's why there's all these earthquakes. And then they get in there and start studying it, and they find the traces. And this is just a cosmic joke. There are so many cosmic jokes in the nuclear age, but one of them is that back in the 50s, they were doing the atmospheric weapons tests of nuclear weapons. It was a terrible thing to do. They did it in the South Pacific. They blew up whole islands. Native peoples were displaced in that process, many of them injured and sickened and horrible stories. And the other thing that happened is that a lot of chlorine-36, which was the activation of the chlorine in the seawater, so in the process of making these nuclear explosions, they're making this radioactive fallout, and it's distinctive because it comes from the seawater. Well, it went all over the Northern Hemisphere, not just Yucca Mountain. It came down in rain. But you go into Yucca Mountain after they dug a tunnel in there, and you can find this radioactive chlorine-36 that's only from making those nuclear weapons tests. What does that tell you? It tells you that rainwater made it down into that mountain in 50 years because those tests were done 50 years earlier. So we took this. I was working with many people, Western Shoshone people, Nevadan people, state of Nevada people, but I was looking at it, and I said, you know, the law of the United States says that there are guidelines that any repository site would have to meet. And one of them is that the rainwater can't move through the ground faster than 1,000 years. Well, we've got evidence here that says 50 years. So let's petition the Secretary of Energy to disqualify Yucca Mountain under the statutorily defined guidelines. Now, you know, this sounds like a lot of blah, blah, but hey, there's a law. Let's make them obey it. So there's like big, long discussion. There's no way to do that. I said, right, they didn't build into the law how to do it, but it doesn't mean we can't do it. So I made up this real official-looking petition to the secretary to disqualify Yucca Mountain, blah, 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 real legalese kind of language, and ran it by through a bunch of people, got 262 organizations nationwide to sign on to this thing. And Richardson was the Secretary of Energy at the time. And we gave it to him. It took him about 10 days to call a meeting. There were probably 20 members of the environmental community who went into the Department of Energy, sat down. Bill Richardson comes in. He nods his head. He says, yes, you're right, but it's not a showstopper. So when he says now that he was fighting Yucca Mountain back then, it's like, show me, Bill, how you were fighting Yucca Mountain back then. Because only thing that happened was that the U.S. Geological Survey started fabricating data. That guy who lied about the truth of Yucca Mountain and started making up data, the USGS Geological Survey lost their stature worldwide. It was one of the very few United States government agencies that was actually respected worldwide because of the quality of their work, that they didn't lie, that they did give real data that everybody could use. And here we go. They start lying about Yucca Mountain because we told the truth and they wouldn't back it.
Uranium, I'm gonna dig as the boy. Oil's all vanishing and coal don't clear no more. Hey, oil's all vanishing and the coal don't clear no more. Well, diamonds are common, maybe I'll take you the score.
From Wolf Mountain Radio's audio library. The name of that song was Uranium. I like that song because the singing style is early rock and roll. During the late 1950s, early 1960s, America's atomic age. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad-Kitishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest today is anti-nuclear activist Mary Olson, a 17-year staff member of the fine organization Nuclear Information and Resources Service, NIRS. We are very honored to have you here at Yad-Kitishi Native Center during your visit to Florida, meeting with other anti-nuclear activists, and coming to speak at this year's upcoming annual Everglades Conference, which I'm planning to attend. Mary, your last comment about Yucca Mountain and the issue of nuclear waste is a longtime central concern of mine, both as a Native American activist and as a professional ecologist. So I am very interested to hear your response to this serious issue of nuclear waste and any thoughts you may have about solutions. As you and many listeners Do Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices know? My Wabanaki tribal nation homeland in what is now called the state of Maine in the mid-1980s was threatened by a proposed federal government nuclear waste dump. Through our wonderful anti-nuclear group, the Clamshell Alliance, which I and other Indians were a part of, that proposal was defeated, at least for now. It has also been my honor to know Nui, Western Shoshone Elder, Corbin Harney, and others who founded and guide the Shundahai Network. Shundahai is a Western Shoshone term meaning peace and harmony with all creation. Shundahai is a wonderful network of activists fighting to protect Nui Sogabia, Western Shoshone territory, part of which includes the area now called Nevada. Nui Sogabia has been desecrated and contaminated over the years by U.S. nuclear weapons development tests. Nui Sogabia is also where Yucca Mountain is located, the proposed U.S. high-level nuclear waste storage site that we all know is not geologically safe or suitable. All U.S. government nuclear activities in Nui Sogabia are violations of Native sovereignty, especially the Treaty of Ruby Valley. I am proud to be a part of Shundahai. I focus on this serious issue of nuclear waste because, as you well know, the nuclear power industry in America had been for quite some time pushing for a federal nuclear waste repository due to the fact that commercial atomic reactors spent fuel management capability either in indoor wet pool storage or outdoor casks are nearing full capacity. Nuclear power utilities never designed their facilities for long-term on-site storage. Plutonium-239 and spent fuel rods are dangerously radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years. Other radioisotopes will remain lethal for millions of years. Furthermore, even with all the serious economic and environmental issues around nuclear power, there is a growing resurgence to increase nuclear power generation, either by expanding current plants or building new ones. This scenario only causes more nuclear waste problems. Mary, would you please talk more about nuclear waste issues?
Well, right now, there are 103 operable nuclear power plants. We say that because there may be some offline today that I'm not clear how many, and on any given day there may be some offline, but 103 operable. There were 120 built. So there are quite a few that are closed that have high-level nuclear waste sitting on the site. The most recent energy bill passed by Congress directs the Department of Energy to create a centralized storage site, otherwise known as an MRS, for this waste, mandating them to do a competitive process to just determine where, that it could be a Department of Energy facility, meaning part of the weapons production complex, or it could be an existing nuclear power reactor that would then take in this quote-unquote orphan waste. A friend of mine, he's an Odawa man who I've known for many years, and he's been aware of my work, and he said to me one day, "You've got to close the borders on the states," because he knows full well, as anybody who's read the literature and has enough background to understand it, that there is no way to neutralize or make radioactive waste quote-unquote safe. There are technologies that would destroy the plutonium in it, which, you know, makes it less likely that someone would steal this stuff and make a nuclear weapon out of it. Most people don't know that every nuclear power plant in the United States makes plutonium night and day, about 500 pounds a year. It only takes 20 pounds to make a nuclear weapon. And we have the largest stock of plutonium in the world in that waste, that high-level waste that they want to put somewhere. So it's tricky stuff. It'll kill you in less than a minute if it's unshielded. Even after 50 years, it'll still deliver a lethal dose in a few minutes. So the hot radiation does decay away over time, but the deadly radiation, the stuff that causes the cancer, is there for a very, very, very long time. So what is the, quote, solution is going to be, as far as I can tell, an intergenerational commitment to keeping this stuff from leaking and keeping this stuff from being expanded and used again, because that's what the Bush administration would really like to do right now. They have a program called the Global Nuclear Energy Partnership. You can find their website at GNEP, globalnuclearenergypartnership.gov. And it's pretty scary. Go look at it. They're trying to turn the entire world into nuclear power. They want to have client states and supplier states. The supplier states will supply fuel, whether it's uranium or plutonium fuel. And the client states will use the fuel, but then send the waste back. And they want to do reprocessing here in the United States. It was outlawed by Gerald Ford in the 90s. But they want to take this big French mistake, this big Russian mistake, this big British mistake, and start doing it here on a huge scale with not only the waste, the largest pile of waste is made here, but they also want to start bringing it in from around the world. And I think South Carolina is the most likely place that that would occur, somewhere on the eastern seaboard, Port of Charleston, Port of Savannah, bring it up the rivers. So that's what we're fighting in the Carolinas where I live.
I shake, I shout from time to time. No attention is paid to mine. I feel for you, not just for me. My heart beats on. Why can't you see? Don't steal my thunder, don't break my heart. I'm your mother, hear my beating heart, hear my beating heart. Rape the land, rape your mother.
From Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah, off Canyon Records CD, Voices Across the Canyon, Volume 2. The name of that special song was Mother Earth Speaks. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest today in the studio is my friend Mary Olson. Mary is an anti-nuclear activist working for the past 17 years with the fine organization Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Their website, www.nirs.org. Mary, another very, very important aspect of the nuclear age we're living in is the environmental health dangers of radiation. Despite the misinformation one may hear from government or industry when they talk about so-called permissible radiation standards, it is important to remember there is no safe level of exposure from radiation. There is no harmless dose of nuclear radiation. One of the great insanities of the nuclear age is how organizations such as the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, the International Commission on Radiological Protection, ICRP, the World Health Organization, WHO, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Agency, NRC, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, among others, often talk about risk assessment in human health or the ecological impacts of the environment. One often hears the term acceptable levels of exposure. The question is, acceptable by whom? Certainly not to me or to our Mother Earth. I've had the great honor to know from my years of anti-nuclear activism Dr. Rosalie Bertel and Dr. Helen Caldicott. They are two courageous health scientists who are very knowledgeable about epidemiology and nuclear radiation. As you and I know, there is medical research documentation from exposed communities. For example, victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, South Pacific Islanders who suffered from nuclear weapons tests, uranium miners, many of whom are indigenous peoples, workers from nuclear facilities such as Hanford or Oak Ridge, atomic soldier veterans, and former residents of Chernobyl who in 1986 were contaminated by the RBMK nuclear reactor explosion fallout. As an ecologist, I am very worried about the serious issue concerning the decay times different radionuclides require. Common vernacular refers this as their half-life. Iodine-131 may decay in approximately 8 days, while uranium-238 has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. Furthermore, a radionuclide may also decay to another radioactive element that has a longer half-life, an example being xenon-135, has a short 9.5-hour life, but then decays into cesium-135, whose half-life is 3 million years. Mary, would you please comment on what I just spoke about?
There is no safe dose of radiation. I had the great privilege and honor early in my time at Nuclear Information and Resource Service to work with Dr. Helen Caldicott on the 1994 upgrade of her book called Nuclear Madness, which had come out just before the Three Mile Island accident and went into many, many printings in its original edition. The 94 version is expanded, and I take some pride in having helped to do that. But part of why I was really happy to be involved was I was such an advocate for the original edition because it had changed my life to read the truth about radiation. And one of the lines in the first edition that I made very sure is still in the 94 edition is, it only takes one cell and one radioactive emission to cause a cancer. So it's possible for cancer to occur from what any scientist or engineer would consider a zero dose, because one radioactive emission can't even be detected as a dose. So we have a lot of interesting information about radiation. And when I talk about radiation, I usually use the government's own numbers. But the problem with doing that is that there are built into those very numbers themselves lies. For instance, all of the radiation units for radiation that people or an animal or a plant receives, all those units are derived from models, computer models. Well, they predate computers, but mathematical models, because you have to sort of assume, well, if you release this much radiation into the air and it travels at this wind speed and it moves that direction and there's so many people living there, and they come up with these estimates that are based on mathematical calculations. But then, in addition, there is an assumption built into each and every one of those radiation standards that the only individual who got it was an adult male in his 20s. A particular height, a particular weight, called the standard or reference man. So all radiation dose levels ignore what happened to the child who was 1/4 the body mass, who with the same amount of radiation exposure would get 4 times the dose, or the pregnant woman with a growing baby inside of her who is the most vulnerable. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that we really can't talk truthfully about radiation except for to say it's not safe. That's the truth. Because as the minute we start talking about radiation in the government's terms, we are telling lies. There is no way to use the government's terms without lying, because there are lies built in to the units of radiation. But then, having said that, I've recently been kicking around the government's numbers, and it's quite interesting. According to their own risk assessment, you come up with 1 in 100 people getting cancer from naturally occurring background radiation, dying of it, which would mean that you get 1 in 50 getting cancer at all from natural background radiation. They pretend like natural background is completely safe, there's no problem with it at all, and yet they also claim that all sources of radiation are the same, and so, you know, if you take their risk numbers and knowing that you're only talking about standard or reference men, they say that you can kill 3.5 people per 1,000 people exposed at 100 millirems a year. And this is kind of Greek for people, but they say the background radiation is 300 millirems. So you multiply that 3.5 times 3, and you come up with 11.5, something like that, which comes out to about 1 in 100. So radiation, according to the government, even the naturally occurring radiation, is not safe. So everything they say about, oh, it's just, it's the same as background. Well, if it's the same as background, then they've doubled background, because they didn't turn background off. You can't. What is background? It's the radiation left over from the Big Bang in the universe. It's the radiation coming from the sun. It's the radiation in the rocks of this earth. It's in those rocks getting worn down. There's a little bit in our water. They fold in all of the radioactivity left from the atmospheric weapons tests because they don't really want to claim it as unnatural background, so they call it natural background, which is how they went from 100 millirems a year recently up to 300 as their statement of how much radiation everybody gets all the time, no matter what. Listening to Yatkidichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you just heard prior to our program station identification was from Native American singer-songwriter Peggy Vermette off the 1999 Turtle Island Music CD entitled Music from Turtle Island, Contemporary Native American Music. The name of that song was Lies. I featured that song because the title Lies exemplifies what people have been told by governments and the nuclear industry since the beginning of the atomic age. We Indigenous peoples around the world are not surprised by these nuclear lies. We Indigenous peoples have been lied to since first contact with those who washed ashore on our homelands. There have been more than 500 lies by America to our Indian nations, as exemplified in the violations and disregard of more than 500 treaties we agreed to with Washington. How can one expect the truth about nuclear energy from a history of American deception, lies, and dishonor to all life on Mother Earth? Mary, I again want to thank you for being today's program guest and your dedication as an Earth Justice Warrior with the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Please visit their website at www.nirs.org to learn more. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We shall conclude with a song by Native American flutist Hovaya Edwards off her Canyon Records CD, Morning Star. The name of this very special song is Sacred Waters Flow, referring to Mother Earth as sacred. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, kin'onwantakwisin to all of our relations.